There have been many massacres in the Philippines, but this stands out as one of the most horrific in the history of the country and even the world. The body count was 57, including 31 journalists and media workers, members of a political family, and several civilian witnesses. This is the story of the Maguindanao Massacre, the country's single worst case of election-related violence and the world's worst single-day murder of media workers. Mindanao, the so-called Land of Promise of the Philippines, is the second largest island in the country, abundant in natural resources and biodiversity, and with many tourist spots such as beaches, caves, mountains, scuba diving resorts, and museums. But one place in the island that isn't particularly known as a tourist destination is the province of Maguindanao. Located in the Bangsamoro Autonomous Region in Muslim Mindanao, or BARMM, Maguindanao is home to rebel insurgency groups, and like many Philippine provinces, it is ruled by political clans. When Corazon Aquino became Philippine president after the 1986 People Power Revolution, she replaced every locally elected official with people she could trust and who weren't connected to the previous regime. But she approached the town of Maganoy in Maguindanao differently by replacing the aging mayor Pinagayaw Ampatuan with another Ampatuan, his vice mayor Andal Ampatuan Sr. Andal Sr. won in the 1988 local elections and served as mayor for 10 years. He then became governor of Maguindanao in 2001, the same year Gloria Macapagal Arroyo got elected as the president of the Philippines. Arroyo ensured her 9-year-long presidency by building alliances through her political party Lakas Kampi CMD, which Andal Sr. was part of. With key allies like the Ampatuans, Arroyo was able to maintain control within BARMM. Meanwhile, the wealth and dominance of the Ampatuan clan continued to grow not just in Maguindanao but in the entire region. In 2003, Andal Sr.'s son Andal Jr., also known as Unsay, became mayor of the newly created Maguindanao municipality of Datu Unsay, which was named after him. Zaldi Ampatuan, another son of Andal Sr., became regional governor of BARMM in 2005 and chairman of Lakas Kampi CMD for the same region. In 2006, an assassination attempt was made on Andal Sr. Arroyo issued Executive Order 546 shortly after this, allowing local officials and the police to deputize militia, referred to as Civilian Volunteer Organizations or CVOs, to aid in the fight against insurgents and secure provincial towns and villages. This effectively handed powers to local warlords in exchange for their loyalty, and in turn further strengthened the power of the Ampatuans. Andal Sr. stayed in office as Maguindanao governor until 2008 when he was already in his late 60s, but knowing that the 3-term limit would prohibit him from running again as governor, he was already grooming his son Unsay to succeed him in 2009. Andal Sr. had gotten elected each term virtually unopposed, and he was confident that his son would win the same way. One man from another political clan, however, was about to do the unthinkable. Ismael Gagil Mangudadatu, more popularly known as Toto, was born on August 15, 1968 to a political family in Maguindanao, tracing all the way back to the royal house of the Rajas of Buwayan. His father Pua was the president of the so-called Magnificent Seven, a group of very influential Maguindanao politicians at the time. Toto, however, wanted to escape his political dynasty, so he went to university to become a doctor. It was there that he met his Hiligay Non Visayan wife, Jenalyn Tiamson, also known as Gigi, while they were both students in Davao City, Mindanao. They married on November 11, 1991, when Toto was 23 years old. The couple had multiple children which diverted Toto's attention and cut his medical studies short, but he later earned a political science degree from the University of Mindanao in Davao. Toto's godfather, Zakaria Candao, was the governor of Maguindanao right before Andal Ampatuan Sr. first held the post in 2001. Before Candao reached the end of his third term, Toto approached him to get approval for a new business venture, but Candao talked him into eventually running for office instead. Toto got elected as a provincial board member in 2003, then serving as mayor of Maguindanao's capital of Buluan from 2003 to 2007. Having reached his term limit, he ran for vice mayor and won. The Mangudadatus, just like the Ampatuans, were key Arroyo allies in BARMM. According to Toto, his father Pua and Andal Sr. were close during the former president Corazon Aquino's time when both of them were still mayors. Both men were even part of Arroyo's Lakas Campi CMD party. Pua initially wanted to run as governor of Maguindanao, but kidney disease prevented him from doing so he gave way to Andal Sr. instead. Andal Sr., at the height of his power, spoke to Toto about creating a new province which Toto could be placed in charge of, separate from Maguindanao so they won't be competing against each other. That initial plan was not put into motion, but in 2006, a new province called Sharif Kabunsuan was created with the approval of Maguindanao voters. Someone else was placed as its officer in charge, and Toto considered this a breach of Andal Sr.'s promise. In 2007, when he was vice mayor of Buluan, Toto finally decided Maguindanao was in desperate need of new leadership. The reign of the Ampatuans had brought about a culture of silence among the people, and Toto wanted to give them their voice back. With escalating tensions in the province, Arroyo mediated between the Ampatuans and the Mangudadatus, who were both part of Lakas Campi CMD, which Arroyo headed. Three meetings were held in 2009 with the objective of preventing election-related violence. One of the meetings was hosted by then-Secretary of National Defense and Lakas Campi CMD Party Chairman Gilberto Teodoro. According to Arroyo's political affairs advisor Gabriel Claudio, an initial in-principle agreement was made that no Mangudadatu would contest Andal Ampatuan Sr.'s governorship, but Toto Mangudadatu was undeterred in his plans to run for Maguindanao governor. November 20, 2009 was the first day of filing candidacy papers nationwide for the 2010 elections. The Philippine National Police, or PNP, was busy setting up checkpoints everywhere, including the province of Maguindanao, where Toto's intent to run against the Ampatuans was already well known. Toto was scheduled to file his Certificate of Candidacy, or COC, on November 23 at the Commission on Elections Provincial Office in Sharif Aguac, formerly known as Maganoy, where the Ampatuans first rose to power. The procedure was supposed to be simple enough, but Toto had received reports that the Ampatuans had threatened to chop him into pieces if he went through with the COC filing. Women, children, and the elderly are highly respected in Muslim culture, so thinking that his rivals wouldn't dare harm women, Toto decided to send his wife Gigi and his two sisters in his place. As an added precaution, he also invited about a dozen journalists to cover the event. Between 5 to 7 a.m. of November 23, a Monday, more than double the number of invited journalists gathered at the private residence of Toto's brother, Assemblyman Kadafe Mangudadatu, who was instructed to be in charge of the journalists joining the COC filing. At around 7:30, the group proceeded to Toto's residence in Buluan, where Toto's wife and sisters were. The plan was to leave for Sharif Aguac at 9 a.m., file the candidacy papers, and return to Buluan for a press conference. They were all supposed to go unarmed, but to address the security concerns expressed by some of the convoy participants, Toto, who wasn't in his house at the time, sought police and military assistance. One of the persons he got in touch with was Colonel Medardo Gislani, commander of the 601st Infantry Brigade. Toto's requests for an escort to Sharif Aguac was turned down. Meanwhile, one of the journalists got in touch with Major General Alfredo Cayton, commander of the 6th Infantry Division of the Philippine Army based in Maguindanao, who assured them that the highway had been cleared and police were in the area, so they had nothing to worry about. Toto told his wife that he'll be joining the convoy already, but his wife replied that if he doesn't show up before they left at 9 a.m. as planned, they would go on without him. Before leaving, the convoy went out of Toto's house, prayed, and had breakfast. At 9:30, they finally departed for Sharif Aguac. All in all, there were 55 in the convoy, with Mangudadatu family members, including Toto's wife Gigi, 37 journalists, and a few of Toto's lawyers and supporters. They had no guns or security escorts, and Toto wasn't able to go with them. The best that they could do for their safety was to ensure that the lead media van had a media sticker prominently displayed. The convoy was composed of 7 vehicles. 4 Toyota Grandia vans owned by the Mangudadatus, and 3 media vehicles which were a Mitsubishi L300 van owned by TV network UNTV, a Mitsubishi Pajero owned by DZRH radio reporter Henry Araneta, and another Toyota Grandia. The van with Gigi and Toto's other family members led the way. At around 10 a.m., just a few kilometers away from Sharif Aguac, the convoy was stopped by uniformed men at a police checkpoint in Sitio Malating, Barangay Salman, which was in a municipality interestingly called Ambatuan. Suddenly, 10 vehicles arrived, letting out at least 100 armed CVO members who pointed their guns at the police officers and asked them to step aside. The armed men surrounded the convoy, kicking and pointing their guns at the vehicles. The members of the convoy were ordered to get out and lie down on the ground, and their car keys and most of their belongings were confiscated. Shortly after this, Unsay Ambatuan himself arrived at the scene, followed by various other vehicles filled with armed men. This was not a routine checkpoint inspection, it was an ambush. Fortunately for the last vehicle in the convoy, which was the Toyota Grandia containing journalists, they had lagged behind by about 10 to 15 minutes and decided at the last second to return to their hotel. Unsay saw them turn back and ordered that they be followed and that a roadblock be placed to prevent any more of the convoy from escaping. Because of this, a Toyota Vios and a Toyota Tamarau FX that happened to be traveling on that same road unfortunately got caught in the ambush. Unsay and his men began mercilessly hitting the members of the convoy who were still lying on the ground. Gigi, luckily, still had her phone, and at 10:17, she was briefly able to call his husband before Unsay caught her. Gigi's last words over the phone were, quote, "Papalapit na si Unsay, sinambal ako," end quote, which translates to, quote, "Here comes Unsay, he slapped me," end quote. Unsay and his men made a thorough search of everyone's belongings, confiscating them. Unsay particularly made sure to locate Toto's candidacy papers inside Gigi's bag. While his men continued to brutally assault the convoy, he radioed his father to update him. Andal Sr. instructed him to kill only the Mangodadatus, but Unsay said it would be safer to kill everyone instead. Andal Sr. agreed. Everyone was herded back into their vehicles, which Unsay and his men commandeered, displacing the original drivers to a Toyota Hilux brought by Unsay's men. Sandwiched between Unsay and his men's other vehicles, they drove through a side road to a more sparsely populated area in Barangay Salman, leaving behind the police officers stationed at the checkpoint. At around 10:30, they stopped on a hill in Sitio Masalay, around 2.5 kilometers or 1.5 miles away from the checkpoint. 3 mass graves awaited them at the site. All the vehicle occupants were once again ordered to alight and lie down on the ground. This was when the bloodbath began. Gigi, Toto's sister Eden, and the others in the same van as them were dragged in front of Unsay. They were pushed to their knees and shot multiple times to their deaths. As they lay, lifeless, in a pool of their own blood, the second set of passengers from another vehicle, despite begging for mercy, was likewise dragged in front of Unsay and repeatedly shot. The same process was repeated with each vehicle in the convoy until they came to the 6th vehicle. Unsay tried to open the van, but the occupants had locked themselves in. Unsay, via radio, received a call from his father, who reminded him that everyone must be killed. The passengers of the 6th vehicle still refused to alight, so they were killed right then and there by a spray of gunfire. The 7th and final van met the same fate since the passengers also refused to get out. With everyone already dead, Unsay radioed his father that their plan was complete. By 11:30, the bodies and vehicles were being dumped into the mass graves and covered up using a backhoe. The 3 journalists in the Toyota Grandia decided to turn back because they either needed to use the restroom, forgot something at the hotel, or sensed what was about to happen to the convoy. Different sources say different reasons for their return, but whatever it was saved their lives. One of them, a man named Aquiles Zonio of the Philippine Daily Inquirer, was told by hotel staff upon their return that 2 men on a motorcycle who looked like they were in the military had come asking for the names of the journalists currently checked in. The hotel staff didn't give them any names as there were no more journalists in the hotel at the time. Zonio and his 2 companions tried to get in touch with the other journalists in the convoy. The last message they got was at 9:59 a.m. By 10:05, they could no longer reach them. Zonio, who had contacted Major General Cayton before they left Toto's house that morning, alerted Cayton about the ambush at around 10:40 through text. Cayton replied at 11 a.m. that he will check with the PNP. Meanwhile, Toto Mangundadatu was trying to get in touch with his sisters after he got disconnected on the phone with his wife. Unable to reach them, he started making arrangements to go to the convoy's location himself, but he couldn't get any help from the military. When he called the provincial director of PNP Maguindanao, he was told that they couldn't get involved. Toto went to local radio stations to make the announcement about what he knew then was just an abduction, until he started receiving messages by the minute informing him of who was getting killed. About 20 minutes after the radio announcements were made, a helicopter was dispatched with the help of Toto's brother, Jong. At 11 a.m., Colonel Gislani, who earlier turned down Toto's request for an escort to Sharif Aguak, ordered troops from the 64 Infantry Battalion, or 64IB, to conduct a rescue operation in Sitio Masalay. At around 3 p.m., 1 kilometer away from the site, the troops heard the backhoe's engine roar loudly, and they saw engine smoke rising from its location. But when they and the helicopter dispatched earlier finally reached the site, Unsay and his men had already fled, leaving the cleanup of the crime scene still unfinished. At the site was the yellow Komatsu backhoe used for the cleanup, with the engine still running. Written on the backhoe were the words, "Property of the Province of Maguindanao, Governor Datu Andal Ampatuan Sr." Various personal items and documents and an assortment of empty shells were scattered everywhere. 22 bodies covered in bullet holes, some with blood still oozing from them, were found lying on the ground or inside the vehicles that had not been buried. Some of the bodies inside one van were positioned as if they were embracing each other. The first gravesite was 3 to 4 meters or 10 to 13 feet deep, and in it were 24 bodies, including Toto's wife Gigi and his sisters Eden and the pregnant Farina, and 4 of the 6 passengers not part of the convoy. The second gravesite had the same depth as the first, and in it were 6 bodies buried in alternate layers of soil alongside 3 vehicles, the Toyota Vios, Mitsubishi L300, and Toyota Tamarau FX, all of which had been crushed by the backhoe. The third gravesite was the shallowest, at only a meter and a half or 5 feet deep, and in it were 5 bodies. A total of 35 bodies were found in the 3 mass graves, bringing the number of victims found on site up to 57. The recovery of the bodies was slow, but their identification took a much longer time as most of them were hardly recognizable due to the damage inflicted on their faces. Some had their necks slashed, while others had their eyes gouged out. Some had tire marks on them. Women, including Toto's aunt and his youngest sister who were pregnant, showed evidence of sexual assault. Gigi's private parts were mutilated and she was shot in the left breast and hacked in the back. The victims in the convoy were, from the Mangundadatu family members, Jenalyn Gigi Mangundadatu, 36, Toto's wife, Eden Mangundadatu, 45, Toto's sister and former vice mayor of the Mangundadatu municipality, Farina Mangundadatu Hassan, 24, Toto's sister who was 5 months pregnant, Mamotabay Mangundadatu, 40, Toto's aunt, Wahida Kaliman Ante, 39, Toto's aunt, and Toto's cousins who were Rowena Mangundadatu Ante, 33, Farida Sabdula Gagil, 35, Suraida Gagil Bernan, 36, and Raida Abdul, 41. From Toto's team of lawyers, Attorney Concepcion Connie Brizuela Jaime, 55, Attorney Cynthia Oquendo Ayon, 35, and her father, Catalino Oquendo, 75. From Toto's supporters, Pinky Balayman, 35, Lailani Ella Balayman, 25, Eugene Demilio Pamansag, 35, Abdila Ayada, Rahina Palawan, 43, Miriam Kalimbol, Norton Sedic Edza, 33, driver, and Razul Daud, 35, driver. From the media, Gina de la Cruz Carpenteros, 41, Saksi News correspondent, Marife Neneng Montaño Cordova, 44, Saksi News and Radio Station DXCP Correspondent. Jepon Kadagdagon, 28, Saksi News Photographer. Marites Cablitas, 38, Mindanao News Focus Publisher and DXTX Radio Anchor. Rosel Morales, 34, Mindanao News Focus Circulation Manager and Correspondent. Bienvenido June Legarta Jr., 36, Frontiera News Publisher. Joel Parcon, 50, Frontiera News Correspondent. Arturo Art Betia, Periodico INI Marketing Director. Ray Merisco, 34, Periodico INI Columnist. Fernando Rani Razon, 44, Periodico INI Sales Manager. Noel De Sena, 25, Periodico INI Circulation Manager. John Caniban, 30, Periodico INI and Sultan Kudarat Gazette Correspondent. Jose Joy Duhay, Mindanao Gold Star Daily Correspondent. Ronnie Perante, 43, Mindanao Gold Star Daily and Sultan Kudarat Gazette Correspondent. Rubelio Bataluna, 44, Mindanao Gold Star Daily Correspondent. Benji Adolfo, 20, Mindanao Gold Star Daily Driver. Victor Nunez, 24, UNTV Anchor. Jolito Evardo, 27, UNTV Cameraman. Mac Delbert Macmac Ariola, 20, UNTV Cameraman. Daniel Tiamzon, 52, UNTV Driver. Santos Jun Gachalian Jr., 51, Mindanao Daily Gazette Reporter. Lindo Lupogan, 42, Mindanao Daily Gazette Publisher. Elinor Leia Dalmasho, 38, Soxergen News Today Publisher and Editor. Francisco Ian Subang Jr., 49, Soxergen News Today Publisher. Romeo Jimmy Palak Cabillo, 56, Tacorong Midland Review Reporter. Ernesto Bart Maravilla Jr., Bomborajo Anchor and Reporter. Hannibal Cachuela, 51, Manila Star Bureau Chief and Punto News Correspondent. Andres Andy Teodoro, 59, Central Mindanao Inquirer Editor-in-Chief. Napoleon Knapp Salaysay, 57, Clearview Gazette Publisher and Editor. Henry Araneta, 44, Radio Station DZRH Correspondent. And Alejandro Bong Reblando, 54, Manila Bulletin Correspondent. The victims who were mistaken to be part of the convoy were riding in the Toyota Tamarau FX, a man named Anthony Ridao, who was a National Statistics Coordination Board employee and the son of Cotabato City Councilor Marino Ridao, and five passengers in the Toyota Vios, namely Eduardo Lechoncito, 53, a government employee from Tacorong Sultan Kudarat, bound for a hospital in Cotabato City after suffering a mild stroke that morning, accompanied by his wife Cecil, 52, co-worker Mercy Palabriga, 32, co-worker Daryl Vincent de los Reyes, 28, and driver Wilhelm Palabriga, 43. News of the gruesome killings, dubbed the Ampatuan Massacre or the Maguindanao Massacre after the place it was committed, soon spread throughout the country and then the world. The Malacañang Palace's initial statement was that the mass murder was, quote, an incident between two families in Mindanao, end quote, which had, quote, nothing to do with President Macapagal Arroyo or the administration, end quote. But on November 26, under intense public pressure, they ordered multiple murder charges to be filed against Unsay Ambatuan. He surrendered and was placed in government custody, all the while insisting that he was innocent and that it was the rebel insurgency group Moro Islamic Liberation Front, or MILF, that carried out the carnage. To prevent the escalation of lawless violence in Maguindanao and hasten the arrest of the suspects, Arroyo placed the province under martial law on December 4. Following this declaration, authorities raided a warehouse owned by Unsay, arresting 20 militiamen and confiscating high-powered firearms, more than 330,000 rounds of NATO ammunition, a Humvee, and an improvised armored vehicle. On December 6, 62 arrests were made, including those of Andal Sr. and his four other sons, and on December 11, multiple murder charges were filed against 100 new suspects who were members of the CVO loyal to the Ampatuans. The case was transferred from Cotabato City to Quezon City in Metro Manila, but it seemed no judge wanted to handle it for fear of endangering their lives. One such judge was Honorable Luisito Cortez, who inhibited himself from the case, declaring that the safety of his family came first. On December 16, Chief Justice Reynato Puno ordered a new raffle of the case, and the following day, Judge Jocelyn Solis Reyes was picked. The number of defendants in the case eventually came up to 197, with a witness count of 357. Because of this, the legal proceedings dragged on, and the Ambatuans seemed to be doing everything in their power to further delay them. Ballistic reports were taking months to be produced, witnesses for the prosecution were disappearing, getting killed, or being bribed or harassed to recant their testimonies. Andal Sr. was eventually unable to face judgment, passing away in 2015 at the age of 74 after 2 months of confinement at the National Kidney and Transplant Institute. On July 17, 2019, almost a full decade after the massacre, the Quezon City Regional Trial Court wrapped up the trial on the case. And finally, on December 19, 2019, shortly after the massacre's 10th year anniversary, Judge Jocelyn Solis Reyes, in a 761-page ruling, served her judgment on the case. It was proven, in summary, that as early as July 2009, 4 months before the massacre, Andal Ambatuan Sr., his sons, and other men had gathered for a discussion on killing Toto Mangudadatu for attempting to steal power from their clan. In succeeding meetings at the farm of Andal Sr. and the mansions of his sons Zaldi and Unsay, further details were discussed and money and firearms were distributed to participating Ambatuan clan members, political allies of the Ambatuans, police, military, and CVO members. They set up checkpoints along the roads Toto was likely to take in his COC filing, and there they made arrangements to kill him and his convoy and dispose of the bodies and evidence. 8 principal accused of the Ambatuans, including Unsay and Zaldi, were convicted of 57 counts of murder and sentenced to reclusion perpetua or 40 years in prison without parole. All the principal accused were ordered to pay millions of pesos in damages to the families of the victims. 28 co-accused, including police officers, were also convicted of 57 counts of murder and sentenced to reclusion perpetua. 15 others were sentenced to 6 to 10 years in prison for being accessories to the crime, one of which was Bong Andal, the backhoe operator, while the other 14 were police officers stationed at the Sitio Malating checkpoint who failed to report the incident after Unsay and his men had already left. Out of the 197 charged, only a total of 42 were convicted beyond reasonable doubt, while 55 were acquitted. Some 80 suspects continue to remain at large. Included in the ruling was the decision on one Reynaldo Bobet Momay, a photographer for Tacorong Midland Review, who was part of the convoy but whose body, supposedly the 58th in the case, was never found. Witnesses last heard him with the convoy through a phone call at 9:15 a.m., but the motorcycle he had driven from his house to Toto's residence was later found in the Mangudadatu compound in Buluan. Additionally, the dentures that supposedly placed him at the massacre site were not definitively proven to be his. The claim for damages of the heirs of Momay was therefore dismissed, but prosecution lawyer Harry Roque said they will be appealing this dismissal. Toto Mangudadatu got elected and served as governor of Maguindanao from 2010 to 2019. Now in his 50s, he is a member of the House of Representatives for Maguindanao's 2nd District. Toto rejoiced over the ruling on the case, but like Momay's family, he will be filing an appeal for the acquittal of at least 2 principal accused Ambatuans. The fight for justice for the victims of the Maguindanao massacre is still not over. To support Stories After Dark, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. All social media accounts you can follow and the email address for story suggestions are linked in the episode description. Thank you for listening.